Blog Talk Radio.
Atlanta, Minneapolis, Nashville, and everywhere else.
To vote.
Of course. I am not throwing away my opportunity to make my voice heard this November.
If we really want our voices to be heard, we need to vote in every election, not just for president, but for every office, school board, state house, senate, all of them. Can you help me get people registered?
Okay, I'm already on it.
Well, keep up the good work.
Let's see who else we can get on this.
Yo, Lynn, what up?
Chris, we're looking to field a full team to make sure every American casts their ballot this November. It's real easy from your phone or tablet to get the info you need to vote. Also, Michelle said so.
Well, I'm on it. There's no off season for getting out to vote. Call Janelle.
No, not now. I'm registering voters. Hey, take this. 4 million Americans turn 18 this year. That's huge. And we need every last one of them to register and vote. Because let's be real. It's going to be the young people of this generation that will change the world.
It's time. Our nation requires it. Our democracy in the country we love requires our attention, voice, and participation.
When we vote, we prove that we are a democracy with the government of the people and by the people.
So every community we visit, it's important for them to know they can really make a difference if they go and vote in every election.
Absolutely.
So we're asking for your help. Help us start a conversation across America about being active participants and our most basic American responsibility, voting. Talk to your friends and family and neighbors. Tell them your hopes and dreams for your family, your community, and our country. When we all vote, we determine our future.
Jumbo tampons, but I can't help it if I've got a heavy flow and a wide-set vagina.
Jokes about menstrual cycles aren't funny. Period.
The government provides homeless shelters with condoms, but not tampons.
Without proper feminine hygiene products, women are forced to use brown paper bags.
In 2016, over 200,000 women were homeless in the U.S.
It's bloody serious.
Thank you.
Right. Welcome back to WAMRDB, the woman's station. Oh, wow. Let me tell you something. We have so much going on in this midterm election that it's really ridiculous. The 2018 midterms, we got Voting Rights Act. They got Stacey Abrams we'll be talking about and Paulette Jordan. Stacey Abrams is the young lady that is running for governor for Georgia, and Paulette Jordan is in Idaho. So women have roared in the primary elections this year, pulling out victories all across the country and shattering records along the way. And what activists are saying is a reaction to President Trump. Okay. Stacey Abrams in Georgia could become America's first black woman governor. Paulette Jordan in Idaho could become the nation's first Native American governor. and Vermont Democrat. So the slate of nominees is Black, white, Latino, Asian, American Indian. They range from something from 20-something to senior citizens. So they done dusted off everything. So there are quite a bit of Black women running for political office all over the United States, and we need to know who they are. It is abundantly clear that we need to start following the lead of Black women, because we show up and do what is important, even when we are being disenfranchised and sabotaged from doing the work. So in 2018, especially important, because midterm elections are coming. We need all the information that we can get. When you are looking at our database at www.AtlanticsRadio, there are a series of women running for office. You can find, it's not as comprehensive, but you can find these women who decided to create a way to be a part of our list. And there's about 100 Black women candidates. We called for people to submit others who have known about it. So now the list is about 375. With that being said, I want to also introduce co-host Ms. Marlene Dow, who is a political activist, analyst, and advocate for women all over the country and in places that I know she has no business being, but we pray her right up out of those countries, because I don't know what to say.
Your mama's listening, and she's saying to herself right now, Karima, you need to tell her to straighten up and keep her butt in the U.S.
Yeah, because you have a very strong list of of clientele from,
I do.
I want to mention
where women should not have clientele. Especially in Middle East. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I know. That scares me. But anyway, we're going to move on to that. So tell us a little bit about some of the things that are going on in your mind that are hot topics for you. Just kind of get you started. What are some of your hot topics?
I'll start with the fact that Stacey Abrams is going to be the first Black female governor in this nation. She carries herself well. She's very smart, very bright. She clearly can work across the aisle with both Democrats and Republicans, male and female. She's open-minded enough to try to give everybody the benefit of a doubt. And she's done it right. Brian Kemp is your Secretary of State. He's breaking the Hatch Act law, running for office on state taxpayers' time. That's breaking federal law. I don't know why your attorney general isn't doing something about it, other than the fact that he clearly works for Governor Deal. I know Governor Deal. I've known him for a long time, but he's still breaking the Hatch Act law. He knows that. Governor knows that. Your attorney general knows that.
What is the Hatch Act law? What's a Hatch Act?
The Hatch Act law was created by Senator Orrin Hatch of the of the Senate, that says if you're a full-time employee of the state or of the county or of the federal government, you cannot run for office on the taxpayer's dime. So your time that you put in your job, if you're a full-time employee of the state, the city, the county, or federal government, you cannot be running for office on that taxpayer time. And as Secretary of State, Mr. Kemp knows he works in that job for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's not an 8-to-5 job. So he has no business running for governor on the taxpayer's dime. If I were I'd start with NAACP, Francis Johnson. If I was him, I'd file a civil lawsuit, starting right there. I'd put a kink in that old boy's butt fast. He wouldn't know what any.
Well,
but
why have nobody did that, Marlene? I don't understand that.
Because they
that
don't.
Makes no
they
sense
don't.
To me.
Because they don't really want to make. They don't want to stir those waters. They know that. I guarantee you, Stacy knows he's breaking the law. She's just a high rep, so her hours can be very limited. She can really only be called in to work basically during session, and that's probably in the state of Georgia. I don't know. You're only in session during, about 6 weeks to 4 months out of the year. So she's not breaking the law. Brian Kemp is breaking the law, and he knows it. So is that what you want for a governor?
Yeah. That's what's so interesting that basically, I'm gonna since we're discussing this, let me share with everybody what I was able to capture regarding the whole thing with Mr. Kemp. And I'm just kind of taken back by it. So this is going to take about 7 minutes. You guys just sit back and check.
There's also a huge political controversy, and that's our politics lead today. With 25 days until the election, the Republican running for governor is being accused of voter suppression by his Democratic opponent. Brian Kemp is not only the Republican gubernatorial nominee, he's Georgia's Secretary of State, and now civil rights groups are suing him, claiming that Kemp's office put more than 53,000 voter registrations on hold. An analysis by the Associated Press shows that nearly 70% of those voter registrations are those belonging to African Americans. This is all because of the exact match law, which is used here, and that means any typo or even a missing hyphen between the voter's ID and their voter registration can be flagged. Civil rights groups say that practice is discriminatory.
The reality is that minority voters are often the ones with unusual names that are sometimes harder for state officials to capture accurately in the state's database, and they are being penalized for that.
Brian Kemp's campaign calls the claims bogus. He says Georgia has increased voter rolls under his leadership. His Democratic opponent, Stacey Abrams, wants him to resign as Secretary of State ahead of the election next month. Let's talk about this. Simone, Brian Kemp doesn't dispute the racial makeup of these voters' registrations that are in question. He blames it on an organization called the New Georgia Project, which is a voting group founded by his opponent, Democrat Stacey Abrams, who registered mostly black voters. He says they submitted inadequate forms.
So that's not true. So there's a little history here. So one, Brian Kemp is currently the Secretary of State, and he was sued by the New Georgia Project in 2014 and 2016 for this very thing. This exact match law was at first a policy of none other than Brian Kemp that the Secretary of State's office did under the table without telling anyone. And the only reason anybody found out late in 2016 was because 50,000 voters that the New Georgia Project registered to vote were not on the rolls. So they reached a compromise with the Secretary of State's office. And while the compromise was reached, the Secretary of State's office went behind their back, went to the legislature, and the legislature passed a bill over the very policy that he had previously been sued over. So Brian Kemp knows exactly what he's doing. He doesn't have the best interests of Georgia voters in mind, and I absolutely think he should resign.
Brian Kemp argues that this is bogus, that this is just being used by Abrams to gin up outrage to get voters to the polls. It is always weird, though, when a Secretary of State is running for higher office, and you might remember Kris Kobach running for governor, and he had a supervisory role there in looking at the recount between him and his Republican opponent. Do you think there's any merit to the charge that he should step down from this?
Or maybe you should delegate the actual, you know, election day supervision to a career deputy or something like that. I mean, to be fair, the law was passed by the Georgia legislature. That's not exactly going under the table. That's like a public act. And you can vote. I mean, they should be told this, 53,000 people can show up, show their driver's
ID, right, yeah.
Their ID. They can vote. It's a provisional ballot. And then people, and this happens all the time, provisional ballots get counted often. And if it is just a ridiculous hyphen missing, the ballot will be counted. So I don't know that the law is necessary or wise. But if I were a Democrat in Georgia, I would be telling those 53,000 people, you need to go and vote.
Yeah, well, that's what the ACLU of Georgia is telling people. They're blasting, hey, guys, please go out and vote, because media coverage that doesn't note this does discourage people from going out. And the ACLU has even asked the Secretary of State if it will be provisional or regular, and Secretary of State's office says they will be regular ballots.
They won't
you
be regular
go.
Ballots. So they have told, but they won't be regular.
That.
They will, in fact, be provisional ballots. You cannot
get out
the Secretary
there, people.
Of State.
Yeah, but the important thing is that the Secretary of State...
I don't want to be part of discouraging them. So.
The Brian Kemp's office is saying you can vote even if you're on this list, even if it's been held up. It will be a provisional ballot.
But that's assuming that you can prove something, right? I mean, it's not, if they're saying something's wrong, if it's not an exact match, then you would have to provide something else.
No, it's an exact match. You vote, and then they let.
Then what's the point of the law? That doesn't
even
make sense. Why would you have an exact match law if you aren't asking people to match exactly?
Well, Chris, she's right. They are asking people to match exactly, and when it doesn't, and when what you have does not match at the polls, they will not allow you to vote. They will give you a provisional ballot. So why, I want to be clear, pointing out, but the provisional ballots, as we all know, are
not
regular ballots, and they are not counted the same way. So I just want to be clear, pointing out voter suppression is not discouraging people to vote. It's holding the system accountable. And Brian Kemp is not being honest here on this thing.
I want to move on to one other thing, a couple other midterm stories. We're 25 days away from the midterms. Senator Ted Cruz's challenger, Democrat Beto O'Rourke, a congressman, just announced that his campaign raised $38 million in just the last 3 months. That's more than triple what Cruz raised at the same time, more than Jeb Bush raised for his campaign during the entire presidential campaign. That's a lot of money in a red state.
Yeah. Maybe an expensive L.
Do you think he's going to lose no matter what?
I don't think he's going to lose no matter what. I think there has been hope at various parts of the cycle, due in part to the fact that people are enthusiastic about him. It remains Texas, and I do think polling has shown in various red states that the Kavanaugh fight galvanized people on the other side as well, and because Democrats were already extremely enthusiastic, that coming closer to parity did matter in those polls.
The latest Q poll has Cruz up 9 points over O'Rourke.
I mean, I think even pre-Kavanaugh, it was a very uphill climb for Beto, and I think he's fantastic. I think he's a fantastic.
Okay, so I'm sorry, you guys. I must have put the mic on. So we just listened to CNN about Brian Kemp. And I'm with Marlene Dow, our political analyst, advocate, just all around woman that has been in politics from the time she was probably 2 years old. But
no, that's let's go with that.
So they gave the understanding is that the exact match scenario is what. Our state is that normal?
First of all, let me say something. Only 79% out of 100% provisional votes usually count. That's only 7 out of 10 votes. So you can throw generally on the statistical side, out of 10 votes, 3 are going to get cast aside, generally if it's a provisional vote. So anyone can go in and vote, but your vote doesn't count unless they can validate that you are who you say you are. The statistics shows that 3 out of those 10 will automatically be thrown away. Only 7 of those 10 are going to count. The next statistic I want to point out is provisional votes have only come up in four states, and they were all blue states: Arizona, California, New York, and Ohio. So clearly this is a tactic used by the red to try to distract voters in blue states. Now, in the respects to Mr. Kemp, he has a conflict of interest, and the Georgia Department of Ethics should be filing a lawsuit against him because of the fact that he's already been caught with his britches down basically twice when he entered the law into the state house. It was his law he entered in seeking provisional vote based on validation of ID. The idea of validating an ID is not – the idea of validating an ID for a vote is not necessarily bad. That's actually usually pretty good because it helps validate your votes in that state, and it's a much quicker process than not using ID, because then – Your provisional voting is really hard to follow. So an ID is not a bad thing for a blue state, I promise you. It doesn't distract or deter voters in blue states. But then when it didn't pass in the House, and he's now applying the law, even though it didn't pass, he needs a lawsuit from the Ethics Department, and since he's breaking the Hatch Act law, he's double dipping here and breaking federal law, period. End of discussion. This is not even something that needs to be debated. It's just factual. And he knows he's breaking law. He might be the Secretary of State, he might be an attorney, but he's not the Attorney General, and he can't supersede himself. If I agree completely with Stacey, he does need to step down, but the problem is the way the structure is set up with the Home Rule Act of the state of Georgia and your charter for statehood, he just appoint another one of his damn cronies, and you wouldn't fix anything.
Oh, okay. So basically, if they had a nip this in the bud in 2016 or 2012,
yes. Right.
This basically was something that they were gearing toward years ago.
A long
possibly.
Time ago. Yeah. He was setting it up for that in 2016.
Wow.
And he's breaking the law on two levels. And the Ethics Department of the state of Georgia, it's not what I would consider, you know, the biggest bulldog out of the 50, but it could be. And if I were them, I'd start making an example out of this fella right here. He's giving them a carte blanche case. So if I were Stacey,
well, let me say this. Hold on. Okay, so let me say this. I'm not trying to be funny or anything, but yes, I am. Okay, so we have governor, two governors, or one governor and a high-ranking other Republican figure who are in President Trump's camp in terms of being a part of the leadership. So,
well, I don't think I'd hang this on President Trump.
No. I'm not hanging it on him. But what I've learned from you is, just like he appoints all of his judges, Governor Deal, and then previously Governor Perdue has appointed all the judges in the state.
That's always
who's
been that way.
Who's gonna prosecute their friend or somebody
in
that's
this
their
case,
comrade?
In this case, that's why it's even more important that the supporters of Stacey Adams get out and vote. I mean, you got to take off work. You got to do what you got to do to get to the polls to vote. Because if she gets elected, then she can go back and sue him, and should sue him. She needs any help. Tell her to give her my phone number, Karima. But seriously, I mean, this is how you stop corruption right here.
So this is open. This is open corruption.
You can even call it sanctioned corruption, because the guy sitting at the top is the one that gets to wink and nod about whether or not anything's done with the corruption. So
there you go. Wow.
It's sanctioned because the guy at the top, who could do something about it, even in the name of right and wrong, clearly is not going to. So it's approved. It's sanctioned through the state to allow and provide and present, you know, open dishonesty. It's supported. It's actually encouraged and supported at this point.
And you know what? That's ironic that you said that, because somebody from WSB television actually confronted our Governor Deal. And asked him about the same thing. Governor Deal actually gave the guy a brush off, saying that we really are very proud of Kemp and increasing voter registration. And we completely stand behind him. And he just walked away from him.
I've known Nathan Deal for 25 years. I've known this man. I know his daughter-in-law. I know his son. They're all from Gainesville, Georgia. I know them. My godfather was Don Tyson. Don Tyson is one. His second largest setup was in Gainesville, Georgia. I know Nathan Deal forever, and I wish I think pretty highly of Nathan. But in this case, that man's not an idiot in politics, and of course he's going to say we're proud of Brian Kemp because they're all wearing the same color tie at the debates. Red. This is not rocket science or brain surgery. You know, it's all about we're hitting for the same home team and we're taking one for the team. And of course they want Kemp to stay in power because they don't want to undo Nathan's history of what he's done for the state of Georgia. I think Nathan's a pretty decent guy. I just think in this case, man, he has dropped the ball and he put the trust, if nothing else, with Sodexo, just in that mess. And the way he allowed GVRA to just run ramshod over the people that are disadvantaged in the bug rehab position. I mean, I'm sorry, Governor, but you messed this deal up big time.
Wow.
And I've always been one to hold back and never speak my mind.
I'm taken back by it. Listen,
I was waiting on that.
Okay. No, I mean, seriously, a whole nother show by itself.
If you have bad leadership in one area, you're probably going to have bad leadership in more than one area.
Well, how do you get over the governor's head? Who do you go
I'll
to?
I'll tell you exactly how you
head.
Get. You get the ACLU, you get the NAACP, and you get, and Stacey's campaign, really. The three of them should throw in together and go file a lawsuit and get an injunction to stop Brian Kemp from politicking one more blasted day on the taxpayers' dime.
But we're down to the wire. We're in the fourth quarter.
It doesn't matter. A court can issue an injunction this minute. And that man has to leave the campaign trail. That minute, he has to leave.
Are you talking about leave the campaign trail completely?
I mean, he has to drop out of the race. Yeah, he has to come out of the race. If a judge finds viable evidence that he's breaking federal law, he has to come out of the race right then.
Well, let me just ask a question back to what you were saying. The federal judges are appointed by the president of the United States, correct?
Well, yeah, but the chances are pretty good in that district. Those judges come from Obama's camp, not Trump's.
Oh, no. We have a lot of vacancies, and they got rid of everybody.
And they haven't been filled yet?
No. I saw that video. When I walked in the Office of Contract Compliance and they had got rid of everybody and it was like a whole floor of empty chairs and desks and stuff. Oh, they cut all of that out. They got rid of the
But if it's a sense of urgency on a timeline, they have to take it to the next court until they get a ruling.
Oh,
and his name has to come off the ballot.
So let me ask you another question then. Now, you heard the young lady mention, let's kind of move away from Brian Kemp for and Stacey Abrams. She mentioned about Texas, or was that Florida? Mm-hmm.
It's Ted Cruz in Texas, and he's going to win. She's right. I mean, he raised the biggest money in the history of the election. That's more so than Jeb Bush raised for the old presidential election. Texas ain't letting go of this deal. Ted Cruz is going to win. I'm sorry, but that's just
And he back. Ted Cruz is a Democrat. No.
No, he's a Republican. It's a Republican stronghold, but that's not even that. Here's the problem that Beto's got. Beto's not even Hispanic. He had a name change to sound like he's Hispanic. He's European. He doesn't have one ounce of Latino blood in his body. He got his name changed so he could try to win office as a Hispanic. He's not Hispanic. That's Beto's problem.
What?
He ain't got a snowball chance. Yeah. Yeah, his name changed in 2008. His name was Larson. That was his last name. And it had it changed to Beto. I swear to God, I'm not lying to you.
I believe you.
You're going to see a lot more of that over the next 10 years. People trying to take minority identity. Yeah.
Where does this all lead to? Oh, because Texas has a strong Hispanic community.
Latino vote. Yeah. Exactly.
Latino. Okay. And wow. But
you're gonna
why
you're gonna see
why
it a lot
so
more.
Much money? Why so much money? For almost kind of what you said, kind of a landslide kind of scenario.
Well, because somebody has convinced a bunch of ignorant people that a dollar equates a vote. There's not an algorithm on the face of the earth that can prove that. That's a bold-faced lie. That does not equate to a vote. It comes closer to being truth with minorities than anybody else because you have churches, for instance, that will put buses together to haul minorities to polls to vote. But to this day, you cannot equate $1 to a vote. It does not exist.
Wow.
So this you actually have people that will, you have some states where it's legal to actually go buy votes, and people do buy votes.
No.
Yes,
no,
ma'am.
No.
Oh, yeah. And South Carolina has been going on a long time.
Okay, so listen, everybody, we are listening to our expert about the 2018 midterms. When we come back, we're talking with Marlene Dow, who is a professional lobbyist, advocate, consultant in political and government affairs. We're talking about the Voter Rights Act. We're talking about Stacey Abrams. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about Paulette Jordan from Idaho. So we got through, there's a lot of things going on with women. When we come back from this particular break, we're going to engage with following up with Marlene, Ms. Dow, about what this Year of the Woman means. So you're listening to WAMRDB, The Woman's Station, with Ms. Marlene Dow. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Loving Care Family Chiropractic, a state-of-the-art chiropractic family facility for the entire family, owned and operated by Dr. Ebony Hornbuckle Preston. Allow her to love your spine so you can get back to enjoying your life. Through the touch of her hands, your pain will flee, giving you the freedom to enjoy your best life. Her concern is not just your spinal health, but your total health. She will show you natural and holistic remedies that can alleviate many injuries and various types of pain. Work with her and you'll feel stronger and healthier after every visit as you begin to enjoy the new you. Make your appointment today. They're located at 5336 East Mountain Street, Stone Mountain, Georgia, 30083, or call at 678-884-3778. We're also available on the web at www.lovingcarechiropractic.com. We are Loving Care Family Chiropractic. Let us love your spine.
Women around the world use sanitary napkins and tampons every day, knowing little to nothing about the harmful and potentially dangerous materials used to manufacture them. Because of this, millions of women are forced to suffer in silence. In the United States, the Food and Drug Administration does not require companies to list the ingredients contained in sanitary napkins and tampons. Yet the average woman uses more than 15,000 sanitary napkins or uses tampons for more than 100,000 hours over her lifetime.
You really don't know what's in it. I mean, I don't think any of us really know, especially, you know, some of the new pads that maybe have a spongy type texture that's supposed to hold more. Well, what exactly is that? What's that made out of? We don't know. So then there's questions of how does that affect our health? You know, with things coming out that, you know, baby powder and talc are dangerous and cause ovarian cancer, what other things are we exposing our very sensitive areas to that could end up being a problem later on?
Internationally, it's even worse. A recent report from UNICEF and the World Health Organization cites that at least 500 million girls and women globally lack adequate facilities for managing their periods. In most schools, girls have to trek to the nurse's office to ask for a pad or tampon, as if menstruating is an illness rather than a natural function. In some parts of the world, girls simply drop out of school once they start menstruating. The manufacturing process of these menstrual aids has been known to cause serious damage to the environment. The toxic byproducts of producing tampons include poisons like dioxin and furan. In fact, conventional sanitary pads can contain the equivalent of about 4 plastic bags. Synthetics and plastic restrict airflow and trap heat and dampness, potentially promoting yeast and bacteria growth in a woman's vaginal area. Conventional sanitary pads can also contain other potentially hazardous ingredients, such as odor neutralizers and fragrances. How do tampons and pads get that ultra-white clean look? Usually chlorine bleach, which can also create toxic dioxin and other disinfection byproducts. According to an EPA draft report, dioxin is a serious public health threat that has no safe level of exposure. To make matters worse, tampons create a favorable environment for bacterial growth.
Certainly there's a lot of plastic involved with pads and the issues with tampons and the history. You have to be careful with toxic shock syndrome and stuff just because of what it's made out of is kind of a nidus of bacteria that's not so good for patients.
Micro tears in the vaginal wall from tampons allow bacteria to accumulate when left too long. One infamous risk is toxic shock syndrome, or TSS, caused by poisonous toxins from bacteria. TSS is a life-threatening condition that affects women under 30 most. While any woman using tampons can get TSS, over 60% of TSS fatalities happen in women ages 15 to 24. For too long, these facts have been conveniently swept under the rug, while hundreds of millions of women suffer with no alternatives. Until now. Introducing Cherish Premium Sanitary Napkins by Inspire. Cherish pads have been designed by women for
Atlanta, Minneapolis, Nashville, and everywhere else.
Radio, the woman station, the new look and feel.
of radio.
WAMRDB, the woman station.
Welcome back to WAMRDB, our digital broadcast online. We are talking about the 2018 midterm Voter Rights Act. And Stacey Abrams of Georgia and Paulette Jordan of Idaho. These women, along with 375 additional women, are running for midterm elections. So we're talking with our experts, our lobbyists, our analysts, Ms. Marlene Dow, who is, God knows where she is in the world, but I always thank you for coming on the show because, I this is what you do, this is what you know. I know I sounded frantic when we were talking earlier, like, Fremont, this is what I do. I was like, what about this, what about this? And you were like, okay, let's do this one more time. I understand. So let's talk about, before we went to break, let's talk about the, I might be off gear here, but the Voter Rights Act.
Okay.
Do you feel that in this age of craziness, that it could be overturned?
No. It won't be enough to overturn.
Why not?
Because, first of all, people, the parties, I think even more so the Democratic Party than the Republican Party, and you got to remember, I'm a Democrat, I'll be the first to admit it. They underestimate the intelligence of the American people. They want to assume that the average voter is uneducated or doesn't have a sense of belonging or doesn't have a sense of right or wrong about what's in the best interest of the American people. So they really push this go in and flip D. And all they do is I think, just force the opposite. Yeah, there's a certain amount of people that are always going to flip D. But the mainstream American, if they're intelligent and educated, something like, I won't say 6.5 out of 10 of both parties have a college degree. All that does is make them mad and go in and flip R. You cannot sell parties. And Paulette Jordan is a classic example of this. In the very near future, you're going to see the lines be more and more blurred in the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party swung so hard to the left, pushing a pure progressive socialist agenda, that the mainstream Democrat or the more conservative Democrat is saying, oh, I'm done with you. And Paulette Jordan is the face of that. She's a gun owner. She is a public lands activist. She is she's a tribal council leader. She's a tribal council Native American chief. And people don't realize this, but when, I think you and I've had this discussion, Karima, but the casinos that are run by the Native American tribes now happened because of a woman named Wilma Telkeller. And the Native American tribes are more traditional than probably just about any other minority community. Men pretty much run everything in tribal communities. They're very, very aggressive. Yet it takes a woman and their creativity sometimes to flip the switch to make things happen. And that's exactly what happened with Wilma Telkeller. And how come the casinos now actually have an income and are run by Native Americans? Prior to that, it was cronyism appointee from the local serving president at the time. And it was just kind of seen as a paternalistic job, an appointment by a president to go serve on the tribal council, which pretty much were white. There was not any Native Americans serving on the tribal Bureau of Native American Affairs prior to Wilma Tinkeller and changing that. She basically demanded it through LBJ is where it started, and it ended with Reagan. She swung both parties. So Reagan's the one that
Let me make sure we're clear about this. But hold on. So the Native American men were just jacking it up really badly. Just
there weren't any Native American men running anything.
Oh.
It was white men. It was white men running all of the Bureau of Native Americans.
How was she able to get that away from them?
Because they had a contract. They had a federal contract with the federal government that came up for renewal every so often. And she knew it was getting ready to come up for renewal, I think in 1978, somewhere in that area. My history dates are not what they used to be. So she started working on this in like 1974. She was really pushing behind the scenes with LBJ in probably like 72, somewhere in there. She started working it. She got it approved through Reagan. So when the contract came up on the structure of how the Bureau of Native American Affairs was run, she forced Reagan's hand to where the Bureau of Native American Affairs, for the first time in the history of this nation, were run by Native Americans. Prior to that, it was never run by Native Americans. It was strictly only run by white men. It was cronyism at its best. Now then, look at how filthy rich the Native American tribes have gotten off of gambling. They were the only place they were the first place outside of Las Vegas to have legalized gambling. And it works for them every day. They're building money on levels you and I will never be able to count, trust me. But they're sovereign nations. They're independent sovereign nations. The state of Oklahoma has 33 sanctioned tribes in it. That's the same as having 33 independent nations inside of your state. Just the structure of politics, of running a state with 33 nations inside of it, is a nightmare. Think of how your state constitution, your county constitutions, because you have to carve out law for each one of those countries inside of your city, county, and state. You have to carve out special law for those 33 countries, independent countries inside of your city, county, and state. That's just Oklahoma. Mississippi has 28 sanctioned tribes inside of it. Texas is a republic, so they're able to do theirs a little different. Same with Louisiana. Louisiana was a purchase. So their law is structured a little bit different for the Native American tribes, but the Choctaw tribe is very strong and alive in Louisiana. And I want to say Crete are too, but don't hold me to that. I could be mistaken. I've forgotten more history than most people will know in a lifetime. But some of these states still have these independent countries or sovereign nations inside of their state, and they're trying to function as a state, a typical state, with those Native American tribes inside there. Then look at how those Native American tribes work with the United States of America, but yet separate and apart from the United States of America. And this woman will win because she understands and represents her people. Her tribe and the state of Idaho has a lot of Native American tribes inside of it. I won't say they have 29 or 31. I get confused sometimes. I've just forgotten too much. But this woman will represent the biggest amount of interest in the state of Idaho. And Idaho's the state that had the problem with the Department of Interior and Harry Reid, if you remember correctly, in the Obama administration, trying to shut down that ranch. Do you remember that? So their voices have not been heard inside the Democratic Party. Harry Reid himself shut down these tribes in the state of Idaho and Nevada. His son got filthy rich off of it. Will never have to work a day in his life. So the cronyism is alive and well in both parties, but I think it stinks more so in the Democratic Party because they rely so heavily on the support and the carry of the vote of the minority. And Native Americans are minorities, just like African Americans, just like Asian Americans. I mean, we could be here all day. Latino, Hispanic vote. I mean, if you're going to hang your label and your hat on minorities, you're diversified so much. Trying to represent all those varied interests is very difficult. The Republican Party says, hey, yeah, you're right. We're after your money. They don't hide it. They don't. Can't blame them a bit. I don't blame them at all. I think they're kind of smart. They basically will come to you and say, you know, they mean it. Bring us your money. Bring us your power. That's it. You and I have had this discussion several times. So, I think you're going to see the Democratic Party's lines extremely blurred over the next 15 years. And as long as they're fragmented, they can't be a collective group and succeed. But they swung so hard to the left with Obama, starting with the ACA, Affordable Care Act, and then gay marriage. They swung so hard to the left. And that was all bad. But when they came out and said, we're all about socialism, that's in this nation, that's swinging too close to communism, and they hung themselves out to dry right there on that label.
Okay. So let's move on to something. So they're saying that this is the year of the woman, particularly women running for the highest executive office that's not president of the United States, but officially there are 12 women nominees for governor in races all across the country. The number of nominees who are not incumbent expands almost 16. There's Governor Gina Rambaldo, I guess that's Rhode Island. You got Kate Levy, Ivy in Alabama, Kate Brown.
It'll only be the year of the woman if the woman wins.
Okay.
If the woman doesn't win, it's not going to be the year of the woman. You can take a claim and label all day long, but until it produces, it doesn't stand.
Well, they adopted this back in 92, from the 92.
My point. And we're in 2018, and so 20, what, 6 years later?
Okay.
You know, I mean, exactly my point. You can adopt these claims, but until they succeed, they don't stand. And so, granted, more and more women who are considered minorities are feeling better about running, but clearly they're not getting support, or it wouldn't have taken them 26 years to come out in droves and run for office. And I would say that's so on both parties, not one or the other. The Democrat tries to claim they're supportive of more minorities, but at the end of the day, you know, I disagree because of the fact. And Stacey Abrams is a classic example of why I disagree. Why is it that I have to get on here and say, due to the Hatch Act, breaking of that, and the fact that Brian Kemp is still running basically an illegal state law and his own election, why is it I have to say this? You've got all kinds of extremely intelligent attorneys there in the state of Georgia, and you need some redneck white woman from the dirt road of Arkansas to point this out to you? What is wrong with this picture?
Well, I mean, again, I mean, okay, all right. Let's go back to what I was typically saying. I mean, it takes, and you know this. I believe this. You know, women are emotional individuals. Their belief system is not to demasculate their man, right?
No.
And
no. No, women don't want to emasculate man.
That we follow the rule of thumb and law that mama and big mama and grandmama and all them, you know, let him lead and all of that. Now, let's say this. With that being said, you have women, right, who
yeah.
are now in their 50s, 60s, who have gotten old enough now to say this is crap because
yeah.
he's going to still do whatever he wants to do. A perfect example, our president, you know,
mm-hmm.
sleeping with that hoe.
Yeah.
Right?
I can't
and
argue
all
that.
Of that.
You're right.
You know, you
yeah.
got, you got, you know, Mrs. Trump, our first lady, has not said too much and not intervened in any kind of manner and stayed in her so-called place. And here we have, you know, infidelity. But to
yeah.
my point is, you get what I feel like is that these individuals have overstepped their, these men have overstepped their boundaries because women have allowed men to just go ridiculously out of their lane. And so that has something to do with politics. When you stated that, you know, I said, if you're the woman, and, you know, why did it take 26 years? Well, it took 26 years for, you know, all of us to grow up and stop listening to our mothers. You know, you
well,
don't
Karina, I would agree with
him.
You. I would agree. 100%, except here's the problem with your argument and where you're going. Excuse me, just a second. I'm sorry. Donald Trump's competitor was a woman who chose to stay married to a man who was overtly a cheater on the people's desk of the White House while in office. That's like the pot calling the kettle black. You know,
say that again.
Okay, if the Democratic nominee had have been any other female on this planet,
oh, I see.
She probably would have won, but she chose to stay married to a man who did it in the Oval Office on the people's desk while in office, and then she's got the gall to stand back and say, don't look at me, look over here. You know, that makes everybody look bad, really, both of them.
I got you.
Know,
which is
the lesser of the two evils, really, is what it comes down to. I said that's
so,
like the
so
pot calling the kettle black.
So by default, we just kind of got, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. I mean, and had it have been had it have been any other female running for president on the Democratic ticket, I think they would have won. I think Hillary would have won if she would have divorced Bill Clinton.
Mm.
But the fact that she didn't have the gall to stand up to her own husband and his actions while he was president of the United States of America and she was the first lady doesn't make her one bit worse than Melania Trump. Not one bit worse.
Well, you know,
sure doesn't make her better either.
And I'm going to go ahead and I am going to introduce our next guest who is calling from St. Paul, Minnesota. This is Ms. Nakima B.V. Armstrong, also the president of the NAACP there. She's an attorney.
Yay.
A mom. a mom with a two-year-old. Yeah.
I love it.
And so, she has come on the line, and I want to thank her for taking out some time to run away from the little one. I'm sorry, Nakima Levy Pound. I'm sorry. She ran for mayor.
I'm changing it to Nakima Levy Armstrong. I got remarried, so that's my new last name. And I'm the former president of the Minneapolis NAACP. The current president is Leslie Redmond, who was one of my former law students, who is one of the youngest presidents of an NAACP branch in the country. So shout out to Leslie. But I'm thankful to be a part of this conversation. Thank you both. I love the passion and the fire that I'm hearing in this discussion. And I do want to challenge the last speaker. I'm not sure of her name. But one of the things I heard you say was about Hillary Clinton and that, you know, since she didn't stand up to her husband, that's a big part of the reason why she lost and that any other Democratic woman would have won as president. Well, I have to challenge that notion because if a black woman ran to become president or any other woman of color, there is absolutely no way that that person would have been elected, at least not in this most recent climate, after, you know, how long it took for the first biracial man to become president. So I think there's some part of it that's an oversimplification because of the history of oppression in this country and the difficulty that black women and other women of color have faced when running for a political office. In whatever jurisdiction, but let alone the highest office in the land.
I this is Marlene Dial. So nice to meet you, and thank you for taking time to talk to us. And I would say I'll give you 51% of that argument. I can't disagree. I really do believe, though I could be wrong, I really do believe our nation wants to get past race. I sincerely do. I think, yes, we still have some diehard, you know, people that are still left around from segregation and that kind of thing. But for the most part, I think our nation wants to get past race. We want to get past gender, really. We don't want to keep fighting silly things that have been gone for a long time. You know, and they were useless things to fight about to begin. I mean, they were worth the fight, but it was silly. We had to have them to begin with, I guess is what I'm saying. And, you know, that generation's been dead for a long time. And I think it's time to stop gnawing on the tree bark and let's move on. But I can't argue with you. I think just people of different race have had an uphill climb in trying to get an opportunity at leadership roles. I think that's so about women too, though, not just people of different race. And so I love it. I love seeing minorities.
I'm sorry. So I want to take like 1 minute. I want to play something for everybody, and we'll be right back. Nakima, just hold on for 1 minute.
Minneapolis is home to all of us. Ample job opportunities, beautiful neighborhoods, and a park system that has consistently been ranked number one nationally. 40% of us are indigenous, immigrants, and people of color. All of us are here together, and we rise together. Even with all the prosperity and access to opportunity that Minneapolis has to offer, unfortunately, not all residents are able to reap the benefits. For the past few years, Minneapolis has consistently been ranked as one of the worst places in the country for people of color to live. Our city needs leadership that will tackle these disparities hands-on. A mayor fulfills the duties of a city and can offer us a chance to rise together. I am a problem solver, a lawyer, a former law professor, and a bridge builder who can help bring people together to solve some of our city's toughest challenges. Together, we can shift the paradigm in our city for everyone, especially those on the margins, by changing how our systems function and making strategic investments. Together, we can work to close the gaps in employment and poverty rates. Together,
we can make Minneapolis a world-class destination that provides access to opportunity for all. My name is Nakima Levy Pound, and I am running to become the next mayor of Minneapolis. I'm asking for your first choice vote on November 7th of 2017. We rise together.
Yeah, baby, yes.
I have to, let me compliment you, Nakivi. First of all, I've been in economic development, which is what drove me into politics for 30 years, probably longer than you guys, not quite as long as Cream has been alive, but maybe longer than you have. And you really hit some wonderful buzzwords in there in your ad, such as indigenous. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean Native American. It means people that are bred, born, and raised in that community. You hit on a couple of other words I noticed that really disenfranchised or enfranchised. Those are very key words to making people feel like they belong and they have an attachment and a connection. So let me compliment you heavily on your ad. I don't know who wrote it for you, if you wrote it for yourself or who did, but they did a great job. That ad alone should have gotten you elected. I'm sorry if it didn't,
thank
but
you.
It should have.
Thank you so much. Unfortunately, it didn't get me elected, but it did create a lot of buzz, and it gave people a new vision for how Minneapolis could function under the leadership of a Black woman.
Yes.
So I wrote it myself, and then I also had some editing support from the film crew who assisted me with the commercial. It was an online commercial. We could not afford the traditional commercials, so we used our best. We did our best in utilizing social media to get the word out.
Well, you did a great job. So, I mean,
jump in here because we only have a little bit, a few more minutes left in the show. I just wanted to ask one particular question. I want to thank you for taking the time out. I know you are very busy. I asked you about the Voting Rights Act. When we talked earlier, that is a neutral act on the federal level. And I asked Marlene the same thing, and I want to ask you, do you see under the climate in which we are exposed to as a nation, that being rescinded, taken back, and or the fact that, as you might not have been, focused in our election, where voter suppression as a NAACP past president in 2017, do you still see that as one of the problems that our community face in terms of that particular act being violated quite naturally during these election periods where there's really tough times ahead of everybody in the next 20-some days? So that's
right.
My question to you.
Absolutely. So we know that in 2013, the Supreme Court came down with the Shelby County versus Holder decision where they essentially gutted the Voting Rights Act. Five of the Voting Rights Act required a federal review of new voting rules in about 15 states. And so most of those states were southern states that had a history of engaging in voter suppression, intimidation, et cetera. And so under the Voting Rights Act of 1964, those states and sometimes it was townships or other jurisdictions would have to get federal clearance before making major changes to their voting rules. And so Chief Justice Roberts stated that times have changed since the Voting Rights Act of 1964, that there was no longer a need for federal preclearance for those jurisdictions that had historically discriminated. And sadly, Chief Justice Roberts was wrong. Voter suppression has continued to happen since African Americans got the right to vote. And we know that every so often, different tactics are put in place to suppress people's right to vote, whether they are eliminating same-day voter registration or requiring IDs at the polls. Those types of things have an impact, particularly on people of color and low-income people. The other thing that we're combating is the fact that within many communities of color, you have folks who do not typically vote because they haven't seen the political process work for them. So we have an uphill battle with regard to voter apathy, people not feeling as if the political process has a positive impact on their lives. And then when you add voter suppression on top of it, people are disenfranchised and it impacts our ability to elect qualified, competent, conscious people who are going to stand up for the best interests of those who face economic impacts and racial discrimination.
Can I make a response to that? Hold on. Wait a minute. One second. Even though it was gutted, the only question left for me is, do you see the Voter Rights Act being rescinded completely, just taken off the table in this particular climate that we're in?
No, I don't see it being totally taken off the table. But I think that what they've done is whittled away at it so much that people are left to wonder.
Can you come back? Can you come back to the phone? Can you come back closer?
Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me?
You're distant. Yeah, you're kind of distant. Okay, are you on speaker now?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now? Okay, I feel like I'm on a Verizon commercial. the Voting Rights Act has been whittled down so much that people wonder, is it still relevant? Is it still useful? I do think that there is some usefulness to the Voting Rights Act. We can't forget the blood, sweat, and tears that paved the way for the Voting Rights Act to even come into existence in the first place. But it will be a while before we get a Supreme Court that is focused on strengthening voter protection. And so that means within each jurisdiction, we have to have people out on the front lines pushing for policy changes. So at the same time that the Voting Rights Act was gutted through the decision I talked about, you had several states that actually expanded voter protections. And so that's a good thing that some states, you know, made the decision that they were going to go ahead and proactively try to protect voters and ensure people had adequate access to the polls.
Okay. Okay, Marlene, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I think my first conflict here is this. I understand the Civil Rights Act was put in place primarily for people of color due to segregation and that kind of thing. But the numbers have changed so much, Nakiva, from projected numbers, from a kajillion different reasons, which, you know, we could be here for 50 more shows discussing. But the reality is that we've come down to the fact that the people of color, if you want to use African-American specifically, limit to 13% of the population of the nation. And while the voters, I agree with you, it'll never be rescinded completely. I agree it's been hacked away at completely. I'd be the first to agree with you on all those fronts. But I think that instead of us or the fight being so much about the ability to protect the right to vote for a person of color, it's got to be about the right to protect to vote, period. Whether it's through Russian, Chinese collusion or, you know, local granddaddy who speaks for, you know, 500 voters. The right to protect the vote for the individual has to be exactly that. And so I agree with you, too, that some states have strengthened that ability to protect that. And so I just want to see us continue to be on the battlefronts to protect a very precious liberty that isn't practiced everywhere in this world. And, you know, we're very blessed
in the United, we got our problems in this country. I don't think anybody could argue that. But it's still, I'm sorry. I've just come home from living overseas, and I think Kareem will tell you, it's, we've got our problems, but it's still the best place in the world to live when it comes to the ability to voice your opinion, to have the ability to go cast a vote. The sad part is too many people don't go vote, period. Like you said, they don't feel like it's worked for them or whatever reason, and they have valid reasons. I'm not saying they don't. But I think we as a nation have got to continue to do what we've got to do just to protect that individual ballot, because it's being attacked and threatened every day.
Okay. Well, you guys, I want to thank you guys for coming on to the show. We are in the midst of a battle of our life. The new generation, as Nakima most eloquently put it, talking to you earlier, is that a new generation of leadership has stepped up, and your generation is making it so much easier for the 20-year-olds, Nakima, to just know their truth. So I want to thank you for your time. Marlene, I want to thank you for your time. We got a few minutes before we get out of the show. Nakima, I know you're busy. I know you're busy, and you might not want to do this, but how can anybody, is there a Facebook page, or do you do a Be Live show or anything like that where people can follow you and look at your journey that people can contact you on?
Yes, so I am on Facebook. I'm at my friend request limit, but people can follow me on Facebook. I'm constantly posting about social justice issues, and I also sometimes do Facebook Live videos. I'm on Instagram as well. So my name on Facebook is Nakima Levy Armstrong. My name on Instagram is Nakima, N-E-K-I-M-A-L. I'm also on Twitter. N-V-L-E-V-Y is my Twitter handle. And then people can go to my website, NakimaLevyPounds.com. I also run my own company called Black Pearl LLC, which is a consulting firm. And it's www.blackpearlmn.com, MN from Minnesota. And I will just, number one, just thank you for having me on the show, Kareema. It's been wonderful having this discussion with you and Marlene. And I just want to urge people to make sure that they go out and vote on November 6th, that they understand that the right to vote is sacred, that people died for us to have the right to vote, and that we need to exercise our right to vote. And if people aren't satisfied with the candidates, then they should consider running for office so that they can be the ideal candidate on behalf of their community. Finally, I will just add, if I have time, that yes, protecting the right to vote for all people is very important. But it's also important to remember that rules and laws and policies can seem neutral, but be discriminatory in practice and disenfranchise people who do not currently have political power or access to economic upward mobility. And so we have to take specific care and precaution to protect those individuals' right to vote because of historic discrimination and disenfranchisement. And we know racism is still alive and well in America. And anyone watching what's happening with the Trump administration can see that very clearly.
Marlene,
I'll go with her 100% on everything she said. I mean, I can't argue one bit of it.
How can people get in contact with you? Because we got about 4 minutes left.
Oh, me? Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I do have a Facebook page. I think I'm almost at my limit, too. Marlene Dial. Like soap, M-A-R-L-E-N-E Dial. My company is called Regional Development Associates, and I have another one, National Development Advisors and Strategies, which is my lobbyist company. I have Facebook pages, and I have websites for those companies as well. And I have Instagram, and I'm pretty sure it's Marlene Dial. I lost track of all this, but thank you so much for reminding me. I probably need to pay a little more attention to that. I need to get a hold of the company that set all that up. And I'm 100% with her. Please go vote. It is just so important. Even if you don't like what's there, go vote. It's crucial. It's our lifeline to, you know, democracy at the end of the day. Numbers rule. So please go vote. I just can't urge that enough. No matter how you vote, just go vote. So,
amen.
If there's anything I could do, you know, feel free. Let me give out my phone number. My phone number is 479-212-4053. Feel free to call me. If you don't like my opinion, please call me and convince me of yours, or allow me to convince you of mine, or let's agree to disagree, or whatever. But yes, definitely verbalize and speak your mind, and let's move forward. Let's move this country ahead.
All right, you guys. Ladies, we are so ecstatic. Of course, you can pick this show up on our TuneIn app at WMRDB on the TuneIn app and MixCloud, SoundCloud, every place else. Thank you all so much. We're going to get out of here and be blessed. My two sisters from two different places. Good night.
Atlanta, Minneapolis, Nashville, and everywhere else.
Radio.